In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.
Ah, yes, indeed. It's time to welcome in Alan Adams here for Pass the Popcorn on a Monday afternoon. How are you today, Mr. Adams?
Oh, you know, I'm hanging in there. Things are going okay, I suppose. How are you doing?
We're settling in a little bit, getting used to this a bit more with each passing day. I don't want to get too used to it.
Well, yeah, that's exactly it. Although the reality, we might not be able to help getting used to it, considering how long this might all go on.
That's true. I did have a chance from a safe and healthy distance to see our friend Jason Preble over the weekend. It was nice to talk with him.
Oh, yeah. No, it's nice to share a few shouted words across the street or something like that. We just do our best to try to maintain those connections best we can.
Absolutely. Well, obviously the movie pickings are limited to what's out there for streaming. You did see one over the course of the week. You want to tell us about it?
I did. I saw a movie called Coffee and Kareem.
Oh, yes, I've heard about this.
Yeah, it hit Netflix this past weekend. You know how sometimes Netflix makes some really great movies, and other times they make movies that are, you know, movies?
Yes.
This is definitely a movie.
Okay.
Near as I can tell, someone went into a meeting and was like, hey, wouldn't it be hilarious if a movie was called Coffee and Kareem? And then they just reverse engineered the film from there.
Oh, great.
It feels very very much of the sort of algorithmically generated kind of vibe that you get with some of the Netflix originals. You know, and we're not talking about this prestige stuff that they're still, thankfully, you know, focusing a lot of energy on. When you're putting out as much content as they are, they're not all going to be winners. And this, alas, is not one of the winners. For those who are unfamiliar, the film stars Ed Helms as Detroit police officer Jim Coffey. He's a good dude, kind of a mild-mannered fella, and he's in a relationship with a woman named Vanessa, played by Taraji P. Henson. She's a single mom. And her extremely foul-mouthed son named Kareem, played by a young man named Terrence Gardenhigh. It's his feature debut. He doesn't care for the fact that his mom's dating a cop. And so he puts together a plan to teach Coffey a lesson with regards to dating his mom. Only it turns out that he inadvertently stumbles upon a scene involving a dirty cop and people getting killed. And before you know it, Coffey and Kareem are in the news. Coffey has been framed for all sorts of crimes, drug related murders, etc. And it's up to Coffey and Kareem to solve the mystery, figure out who's really behind all of these various crimes, and maybe learn a little something about one another along the way.
Oh boy.
Look, it's funny because I am very much a fan of foul-mouthed children. Like, that's really in my wheelhouse. Kids,
they come to my house.
Swear words. So I should have liked this movie, but I did not. And it's tough to say. One of the things that I'm kind of struggling with. Is Ed Helms good?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think is it safe to say he's got a very limited range?
Well, it's just like, you know, he had a nice run at the early, you know, the early part of the 2010s. But I feel like this question dawned on me while I was watching the movie. And so when I was working on the review, I kind of went back through his IMDb and started looking. And I'm like, it's been a really long time since he did something that was genuinely, like, good.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's his fault, if that's his representation's fault, if it's some combination therein, But it was just one of those things where it's like, yeah, I don't know if Ed Helms is the guy you want leading your movie at this point, which is kind of a bummer because I always he's a likable enough guy, but I'm just not sure that he's that good. Taraji P. Henson is great, but you know she's basically a plot device in this movie, so she doesn't get a lot to do. The actor playing the kid, and this is 100% on the director and the screenwriter. This is not the kid's fault because you can tell he's got some charisma, so you can tell he's got something. But when you're in a situation like this, when you have a kid, there has to be some degree of likability there for his work. And this kid just comes off as a jerk.
Okay.
But when the director is the dude responsible for last year's god-awful Stuber, you can't expect a lot. And that's the sort of movie you get. That's what you get. Coffee and Kareem is the exact sort of movie you would expect from the guy responsible for Stuber.
Well, there you go. I think that says it all right there. Man, well, I'm sorry, but thank you once again for taking that one for the team.
Yeah, and like I said, it's not good. It isn't actively unpleasant. Like, it's basically, it fits the Netflix need of something that could be on in the background that you have to pay attention to while you scroll through your phone.
All right, well, that it works in that very specific niche.
Yes.
All right. You also you got a couple of books you want to talk about.
Yes, that's okay. It's one of those things where it's basically been movies and streaming movies and books. Like that's been my beat for the past few weeks. Since we went dark on the print side, because again, it's hard to write about things happening when the things aren't happening. So you take the swings where you can get them. But I actually had a couple of sports books on the list that were actually quite good, both baseball related. Which, considering the non-opening day, were you one of the I didn't think I would feel it the way I felt it, but I was really I was genuinely crestfallen when it dawned on me that it was opening day and there was no baseball.
It was home opening day. That was the one that kind of got me a bit more. Like, oh,
we're not doing this. It's kind of, it's a bummer. Again, there are obviously much more important things out there in the world. But it was just kind of a bummer.
Well, you got a couple of good ones. And I think one of them is a book that we've talked about a little bit, and we're going to have the author on. Is one of them Wax Pack?
It is.
Yeah.
In the opening of my review, when I first heard about this book, the full title, The Wax Pack on the Open Road in Search of Baseball's Afterlife, the author's name is Brad Baluchian. My reaction was just like, God, that's a good idea.
Mm.
Because the whole gist is he basically got a pack of 1986 Topps cards, opened it up, and then went on a road trip to basically try and talk to the guys that he found in that pack, the players that he found in that pack. And it's just so good because it's this wonderful collection of, dudes who sort of run the gamut as far as like fame and all that stuff. Like Carlton Fisk is in it. And then you've got guys who were, who were good for a long time, but not necessarily Hall of Famers, your Dwight Goodens and your Rick Sutcliffe's, Gary Templeton is in that, Vince Coleman.
Yeah, and Fisk doesn't come off as the greatest guy in the world.
No, not at all. That's kind of been his MO, like, since he retired.
Mm.
Like being like crusty old New Hampshire guy. which, he's certainly being true to himself, and you can't fault the guy for that. So Baluchian just goes across the country and tries to track down some of these guys and talk to them about their life in the game, their life after the game, et cetera, et cetera. It's basically in book form, a chance to, as former Deadspin editor and friend of downtown, David Roth would say, remember some guys.
Yes.
And it's just like, and the really fascinating ones are the dudes that you either never heard of or had forgotten about. My favorite parts, he spends some time with Rance Mullinix, the old Toronto Blue Jay who, he's a realtor now, does some coaching on the side. At one point, the author finds himself in Gary Templeton's living room watching kung fu movies.
It's great.
And he happened to have in the pack a card of a guy named Don Carmen, who was his personal baseball hero.
Right.
And so he winds up, you know, having an encounter with that guy, and among other things, going to the zoo. So it's like, oh yeah, you get to, you know, you're hanging out with your childhood hero, and you go to the zoo because of course you do.
Well, and the author's got an interesting personal story as well.
Yeah, he talks about, you know, a little bit about sort of finding his way. You know, it's tough to. I referred to it as like. As on the road, but with more baseball and less self-seriousness.
Mm.
Like it's this great road trip with baseball at its center, but it's also a meditation on time and how we mark its passage and what it means to be a lover of the game. And the sort of trip obviously causes a good deal of introspection on his part, and so he starts to think about his past, his future. Some of the relationships that have come and gone along the way. It's such a great read, and it's such a fascinating idea, and just really wonderfully executed. Like I was really jazzed when I heard about this book, and it lived up to my expectations, which were lofty because again, it's rare for me to hear an idea for a book and be like, Jesus, I wish I'd thought of that.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. What's the other book?
The other book, and I just got the review up today, actually. It's a book called Swing Kings. It's subtitled The Inside Story of Baseball's Home Run Revolution. It's by a guy named Jared Diamond. He's the national baseball writer for the Wall Street Journal. And it's basically a deep dive into the sort of fringy outsider, like swing consultants who have sort of revolutionized the way players have swung the bat over the past few years. Because again, anyone who's been paying attention knows that the ball is flying out of the ballpark at unprecedented rates.
Mm.
And
all about that launch angle, baby, right? Launch angle.
That's what I'm saying, and that's what he's and he talks to a lot of the guys who sort of champion that sort of shift in the swing. And so it's, all these independent coaches, and it started like so much longer ago than I would have guessed. The sort of godfather of it all is this guy named Craig Wallenbrock, who I'd never heard of. But back in the early 70s, he's a, pot-smoking hippie who spends all his time surfing. But he was also a former member of the San Diego State baseball team. He had sort of walked away from the game, but his little brother wanted some coaching help. And so Wallenbrock kind of came back and then sort of fell into this weird sort of guru kind of thing. He combined, he was really one of the first guys to use video study. Get a sense of how the greats swing the bat. And then, he brought together, introduced some elements of Eastern mysticism because he's a hippie and like all these other disciplines and turned it into like this sort of weird sort of underground cottage industry where he was teaching people, I say a new way to swing the bat. But ultimately anyone who had ever read Ted Williams' book, Science of Hitting, already kind of knew this stuff, but it's remarkable because baseball being such a, so bound to its history, when you're bound to history, you're also beholden to it. And the idea of doing something different is really frowned upon. It's certainly maybe less so now, but certainly, back in the day, the idea of a guy who'd never played, who'd never played the game at a high level or at the highest level, saying, actually, the way that you've all been teaching the guys to swing for a century, that's actually wrong. And so, and this is the way you should do it. But it's really fascinating. And there are all these really colorful and weird characters who sort of built their reputations, online or through word of mouth. But then you sort of meet some of the guys who sort of turned their careers around by working with these dudes. Justin Turner, J.D. Martinez, Josh Donaldson, Aaron Judge, like all these guys have stories of working with this swing guru or that swing guru, like these independent coaches. And it's just a great sort of look at these guys and the sorts of things they were doing, operating completely outside the sort of standard baseball establishment. And then sort of interspersed throughout, you've got a little bit of a George Plimpton vibe thing happening, because Jared Diamond wants nothing more than to get to hit the ball in the air during the New York Boston media game that will be happening, and he uses that time. He's actually quite thoughtful about it, because you know it could easily become very self-serving in that way. But he just drops little tidbits in here and there, dropping himself into the story, which gives you sort of a chance to get more of a firsthand experiential account of how these coaches sort of. Like, their whole deal is they're getting someone to buy into fundamentally altering something that right. They've been doing the same way their entire life. And to develop that sort of trust, it's like, you know, it needs to be results-based. And it's just fascinating. It's fascinating that these guys were able to carve out these niches completely outside of organized baseball. And it was just a great read. Jared Diamond's a really talented writer. And it really sets up that dichotomy between, you know, inertia and innovation that operates, in any industry that's been going concern as long as baseball has.
Fantastic. And, Alan, people can read your entire reviews online at MainEdge.com?
Yep, MainEdge.com. We've got those books. And if you're not feeling sports, we've got some great fiction. The Glass Hotel, Emily St. John Mandel's latest one is great. And a phenomenal nonfiction book about the history of crossword puzzles called Thinking Inside the Box that you might want to check out as well.
That sounds great. Alan, thank you as always, my friend. Have a good week, and we'll check in again next Monday.
Sure will, man.
Alan Adams of The Main Edge with us every week here on Downtown, and hopefully soon twice a week right here in studio where we can see him up close and personal.